From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of June 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in the first half hour of our program, that's right, this is a special hour-long edition for those who can stay with us for the second half hour, or if not, you can always hear it online at willag.org. In the first half hour, naturally, we'll talk on a Thursday afternoon with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Lisa Braltz will be here with this week's edition of In My Backyard. And we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt. And then in the second half hour of the program, we'll take up crop conditions in the state of Illinois with agronomist Emerson Napsiger and look at the developing BT resistance story for western corn rootworm with Mike Gray, Extension agronomist. So stay with us for the whole hour if you can. If not, visit us online for the rest of the program at willag.org. That's willag.org on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
At the CME Group in Chicago, the electronic trade finished at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Prices in the corn pit were the July at $6.75, up 8.25 for the day, September at $5.21, up 6 cents, and December at $5.17, 6.5 higher. The March contract for corn at $5.28.75, up 6.25. The May up 6 at $5.36.25. And the July of next year at $5.42.75, 5.25 higher. The soft red winter wheat at $6.22.5, up 6.5 cents in Chicago. And at the hard red in Kansas City, settlement price for the July there at $6.46, up 5.5 cents. From Chicago, the bean pit now, July futures, $13.87.25, down 21. August at $13.60.75, down 17 for the day. November beans at $13.08, down 11.75. And the January at $13.08.5, 12 lower. May contract at $12.66.75, down 10.75. July bean oil down $1.04 at $48.06. July bean meal at $4.17.90, down 4.10. June live cattle at $116.10. That's down a buck for the day. August feeders at $156.97.5, $1.37.5 lower. And the June lean hogs managed to gain 77.5 cents to settle at $94.75. This is the closing market report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil, $83.91 a barrel, up $1.29. Ethanol at $2.06.3, a penny and 3 cents higher. Natural gas at $2.48.9, that's 30.4 cents higher. And the RBOB at $2.67.3, 1.8 cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.62.3, a penny and 2 cents higher for the day. And the gold futures at $1,618.40, up 30 cents. The dollar at 81.99, that's down 0.07, and the CRB index on the day at 272.06, up 2.77 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area looks like for this afternoon. Sunny skies and a high of 86 degrees, warmer than it has been, with a south-southeast wind at about 11 miles per hour this afternoon. And then this evening, mostly clear and a low 59 degrees with a southeast wind at 8 miles an hour. Friday, sunny skies and 91 degrees with a southeast wind, and Friday night, clear and a low of 64. Saturday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 93. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 70 degrees. On Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 88. And Sunday night, the chance of showers and thunderstorms continues, and mostly cloudy, a low of 69 degrees. Monday, mostly sunny and 89. Monday night, partly cloudy and 70. Tuesday, sunny and 89. Tuesday night, cloudy and 70. And on Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high of 89 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
This is the closing market report. It is a special hour-long edition. Stay with us, if you can, for the second half hour of the program. We'll talk with entomologist Mike Gray about the western corn rootworm in Cass County and other parts of north central and northwestern Illinois and Iowa, where it has been evolving potentially, although that's not confirmed in the state of Illinois. There is confirmed resistance to the Cry 3BB1 BT corn in the state of Iowa. We'll also hear from Emerson Nafziger in that second half hour. On the phone line with us this afternoon, though, from Mandeville, Louisiana, is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, one thing before we get started with your analysis of the marketplace, I want to say that we're coming down to see you, and we're looking forward to doing that the 20th to the 24th of August. I've had a few inquiries, Dan, since we filled the first bus up. I want to know if we can take a second one. I'm a little hesitant to do that, but let's say that if we get 20 people that sign up for the wait list, and you can do that by making a phone call, check out all the numbers online there at WILLAG.org, or if you don't have access, dial this number, 217-333-7300. That's the 217 area code, 333-7300. And then ask about the Follow the Corn bus tour. We'll put you on the wait list, and if we get 20 folks, we'll take a second bus or really consider taking a second bus. I don't hold out a lot of hope for that, but there are already 6 people that are on the wait list, Dan, so I guess we're ready to come down and see you in the month of August. Hopefully you'll have some good things to show us and tell us about, I think.
Well, we're looking forward to you coming on down. It will be hot and muggy. There is no doubt about that. August is a pretty muggy month, but we're looking forward to you stopping at Mound City halfway down, and then hooking up with us down in New Orleans at the Zeno Grain Export Facility. That will be very active, probably loading soybeans at that point in time, because there is a very big book of soybeans for the export market on for August, September, and October. So who knows what we'll be loading at that point in time. That'll be dependent upon which ship comes in. But it will be active, and, of course, the Mound City area will probably be in full-fledged harvest at that point in time, as well as you drive through the Boot Hill and you it's too bad you don't have time to stop at our Memphis location. We have a brand new location there in Memphis, but I know that doesn't fit the schedule well. But that'll all be in the full-fledged harvest at that time when you're down there.
Well, you might be able to talk me into it. But we'll see. We're going to stop at Mound City. That's a rail and a river terminal. That'll be fun to watch. So I assume they unload rail cars there and then put them on the barge. But maybe they're just shipping out in other places. We'll find out when we get to Mound City. That's on the Ohio River. And then I've been told that we'll see a whole bunch of barges being unloaded probably with soybeans once we get down there to see you, and then those will be moved off into maybe a big ship and head off overseas someplace. So you said there's a big book on, and I take it that's in part the reason that you've been so bullish the soybean market. Despite that, Dan, we're down 22.25 cents today, and it's not been a very pretty week, actually.
Well, but when you look at the overall chart pattern, it's basically a corrective decline, we'll have to kind of go from there. I don't... we are, fluffing around with some pretty fluffy numbers. So a corrective decline is not uncommon. I think, you know, the outside market influences are very scary with what may or may not happen in the Eurozone and how many shoes will fall and dominoes will fall and how that may come back and impact commodity prices. And, of course, the weather guys, as always, have mixed opinions on how much rain and when that rain is going to come. But I think the latest maps that at least I was looking at did give the Western Corn Belt some pretty good chances of rain. But the The eastern Corn Belt was going to come up short again. And if that would materialize, I think the weather market continues to be in place. Many people know that I do follow the season changes, and we do have the summer solstice coming up the end of next week. And that will be a key time frame, I think, to see if we're going to have any kind of shift in a weather pattern. If we don't get a shift in the overall weather pattern, which has been dominantly dry, it has been a little cooler than probably, but it has been dominantly dry and warm. If we don't see a major shift at that point in time, then I think you'd have another 3 weeks of dominantly warm weather, and that would pretty well spell disaster, I think, for the crops. I don't think it would be a complete failure, but I think USDA's lofty yield projections are coming down very quickly at this point.
To be clear, on the soybeans, you're basing this off fundamental supply and demand, so whether we have a good bean crop or a bad bean crop, as long as the outside markets don't have a huge influence, your view is that the beans are going to be tight one way or the other, and the beans should stay high-priced. Is that right?
Well, I'm real friendly to the corn-soybean ratio. I think soybeans are going to gain on corn. Let's put it that way. And, of course, you know, how much they gain on corn, you know, everything is still pretty much weather. We're going to need some moisture in the double crop bean areas if we're going to have a decent double crop, or we're going to come in way short on the beans. I'm actually up north right now, been driving around central and northern Illinois, and you can tell that the bean population on this no-till ground is terrible. So I think yield expectations on these soybeans, unless we get some rain pretty quick, are going to fall apart fairly quickly, and the market's going to have to wrestle with that. Now, we do have that big plantings report coming up on June 30th, and there's no doubt there's going to be some pretty big numbers. I'm sure there'll be some surprises in the planting, but we had a dry enough spring that every acre that wanted to be planted got planted. So that is going to be something to kind of watch for.
And it's been dry, remained dry, so every acre that wants to be planted for beans may not be planted. I saw a note in my inbox just this afternoon suggesting that in the southern part of the state of Illinois, producers may not be able to plant, and they may be looking to collect a prevent plant on the second planting, I suppose, of soybeans or something along those lines. But
I think the prevent plant date is like June 20th, so we're within 7 days of that or 6 days of that of prevent plant on beans. I've noticed that in the airplanes. There's a lot of bare fields in the south. I think that's waiting on some rain to plant some beans, and that we definitely need to get some rain down there very quickly to get some of those beans planted. But you can see it from the air. There's a lot of bare fields out there that don't have no crop in them.
In your travels around the northern part of the state of Illinois, what do you think of the corn crop so far?
Well, it's hanging in there. Everything looks pretty good. I do think, depending upon where you're at, I'm over in northwestern Illinois back home. They were lucky to squeeze an inch of rain out of that last pattern that went through here a week ago. So things look better over here than probably is if you would go further east. But everything still looks pretty good. But you could tell that the growth factors is really been slowed here with a lack of rain, and we need a good couple inches of rain here, and I think everything would grow like the dickens. But until that happens, I think everything's kind of in a hold mode. If there's anything that I've been surprised since I've been up here traveling around, is I think all of this advanced maturity talk that we had here a couple months ago with the early planting has almost been muted, I think, by some of the cooler weather and the drier weather, and the crop is more normal in many areas than probably as advanced as I think what they were planning on.
Well, we'll talk to you in another week, and we'll look forward to seeing you in August, Dan.
Very well, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's coming to us from the northwestern part of Illinois this afternoon, but usually located in Mandeville, Louisiana. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. We will be heading down to see Dan in the month of August from the 20th to the 24th. If you want to get on the wait list for a second bus, please do so. You ought to make that call now if you're planning to do it. I'll give you till maybe midweek next week. And if not, we'll just take the one bus. I think that's a big success, and I don't want to damage that too much. So we'll go with one bus. But if we put enough people on the second bus, we'll put one together and take that down. There were six on the wait list already. So if you're thinking about it, you can just hit willag.org or dial this number 217-333-7300 and find more information. On the phone line with us now from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Todd?
Have you had horseshoes in your lifetime? I bet you have.
I've had more than one, that's for sure.
Okay. Let's talk about the cash grain market instead. How's basis holding up?
Well, basis is pretty good. You know, on corn, we're still looking at different people that are going out there trying to source corn, and I don't know that they're sourcing it quite as handily as what they want to. You know, we're still looking at some, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, depending on where you're at, over on the cash market, which is pretty hot. And, you know, it doesn't appear that, you know, whenever you watch the market yesterday and everything was down other than the lead month, it tells you, you know, that they're still out there trying to source corn.
Just trying to source that corn. Old crop is in short supply. And they tend to do this in bits and clumps. So how long do you think we'll stay 50, 60, 70 over?
Well, that's a good question, but the bottom line is there's going to be a lot of uneasiness, especially with weather issues moving forward until we get some corn coming online, you know, in the south. And I think once there's a little bit of an abatement of this fear, maybe things will change a little bit. But until then, I look for some really high prices over.
How are weather conditions in your area?
Oh, awfully dry. You know, there's a few little spots here and there that got some rain this week, but for the most part, you know, everyone is hurting for rain. Corn crop for the most part looks pretty good. It doesn't look you know, terrible at this point, but we're just all feeling very blessed that we're not looking at 95 degree weather either.
You may be very surely said it's going to get warmer, and probably not, and not any rainfall with that. I think that'll be hard on the crop, won't it be?
There's no question it'll be hard on it. You know, guys are just kind of hoping that we can get a rain in the next 10 days, and if we can, I think guys will feel a little bit better. But there's no question if we go too much longer in here, there's going to be some significant damage.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn would be 637, fall 501. Cash beans would be 1380, fall 1284, and a wheat bid of 614.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a second. And we'll talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast right here on Illinois Public Media's CMR. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast is Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
I'm good, Todd.
Well, the warmer weather is on its way in. Sometimes that brings with it rainfall. Sometimes it does not. How about this time for different parts of the Midwest?
Well, all right. We'll start with the eastern half of the Midwest. From about the Mississippi Valley eastward, it's not going to be a wet period, even as the warmer air comes in. We're going to have all of that stuff lurking to the west of the Mississippi, but to the east of that, it looks like increasingly warmer temperatures as we move through tomorrow and Saturday. And then there's a chance of some showers or thunder showers Saturday night and mostly on Sunday when a remnant of a front moves through. But that's going to be quickly replaced by warmer and drier air as we move into the rest of the week. And the whole week looks like temperatures averaging about 4 to 6 degrees above normal. High temperatures running up to around the 90-degree mark in northern Illinois and in central Illinois, mostly 90, perhaps the low 90s. We're not looking for any real heat there. For the western corn belt, it's a different story. We're going to see quite a bit of rain. Right now, there's a package of rain up in northern Wisconsin. That's going to expand southwestward this afternoon and evening, coming through southeastern Minnesota, most of central and western Iowa, and into eastern Nebraska and Kansas. So that whole area in the west of the Mississippi is going to see quite some opportunities for showers later today, tonight, It'll repeat again tomorrow as the front gets stalled out there west of the Mississippi. And finally, on Saturday night and Sunday, we get that front to move eastward out of there. But significant amounts of precipitation in the western Corn Belt, probably 1 to 2.5 inches in parts of Iowa, northern Missouri, where they could use it, and parts of Nebraska and Kansas. East of the Mississippi, I'm not looking for much more than a quarter of an inch maybe for the most of the period, mostly on Saturday night, Sunday.
And then if you go further than the 7-day period, if you go 7 to 14 days out, is there anything that you see in the offing for the eastern Corn Belt? Because it's dry now, and if we only pick up a quarter, it's going to be really dry by the time we get to there.
No, I'm really not looking at anything very wet from there. We're in this very persistent type of pattern. We do get some of flattening of the jet stream, which brings systems eastward. But while they come eastward, they also get shifted northward, and we probably see some across the Great Lakes regions. But further south in the central part of the eastern Corn Belt and down into the Ohio Valley, I'm not looking for very much with this following week either.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go?
Okay, well, we just to talk a little bit about Southern Hemisphere. They had their first cold shot a week ago, ended the growing season in parts of southern Brazil, northern Argentina, but nothing that looks very damaging. Temperatures back there are back to near normal, and we're looking at precipitation that's adequate for the period.
Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. If you can stick around, please do so. In the second half hour of the program, we'll talk with Emerson Nafziger, agronomist at the University of Illinois, about crop conditions in the state, and then with entomologist Mike Gray about the western corn rootworm and that finding in Cass County, where the western corn rootworm has been feeding on BT corn roots, and, well, it's been surviving, too.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, 3 blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House Catering can tailor a menu and price for events from corporate box lunches to weddings, business meetings, and other special events. More information is available at 365-8004.
You're listening to a special hour-long edition of the Closing Market Report. Earlier this week, I spoke with Extension entomologist Mike Gray about Cass County, Illinois, where a cornfield has been pretty much devastated by the western corn rootworm. The adult beetles are there just about a full month early, but more importantly, those western corn rootworm as larvae had been feeding on the root system of those corn plants, and they were BT corn. I asked Mike Gray about the field.
Well, that's right. Last week, I was contacted by a seed company representative who has responsibilities over in western Illinois and asked that I travel out to western Cass County to inspect a field that had been reported to have severe corn rootworm injury to the root systems, and also the fact that there were lots of adult beetles out there in the field. And that was very early, the earliest that I had ever heard beetles being out in cornfields. So I wanted to go out and take a close look at that particular field.
They were out, as best you can tell, about a month early over the history of you looking at them?
That's correct. Normally, I begin to get some of the first reports in Illinois of adult western corn rootworms being out around the 4th of July, during that holiday celebration. And so this was really just about a full month in advance of that. And as I indicated, that's the earliest that I've ever seen western corn rootworm adults out in a cornfield.
This was a cornfield that should have not had western corn rootworm feeding in it.
Well, this was a field that had been planted to a BT hybrid offers protection, or it should offer satisfactory protection against corn rootworm larval feeding. The plants were under pretty intense moisture stress. It's been a hot and dry spring thus far in the state. The leaves were rolled very tightly. The adult beetles were feeding on the epidermis of the corn leaves, which will add further stress to those plants. This feeding on the leaves is pretty common when the beetles don't have any pollen, don't have any silks to feed upon, and so they were really causing quite a bit of injury to the leaves. But more importantly, after we began to dig up some roots, it was pretty clear that some very significant pruning had also taken place on those root systems.
You say significant. How significant? One node, two nodes, three nodes of roots?
Well, it was pretty common, certainly, to find one node of roots missing. On many of the plants, 1.5 to 2 nodes of roots were missing as well.
That's serious enough damage that it causes a problem in the field.
Well, when you have that level of pruning, it sets the stage for potential lodging that can occur later in the season as the plants get taller, as they begin to develop ears. If you have storms move through the area with, you know, rain and winds in particular, those plants will lodge, and eventually this creates kind of a tangled mess to be sure for producers to be able to get through and combine those fields efficiently. In addition to that, many hybrids will try to regenerate root tissue, and that comes at an expense, obviously. Instead of the plant's resources going into filling ears, they're spending energy developing a new root tissue. So a yield loss due to physiological reductions in yield potential will occur at some point as well.
This comes on the heel of Iowa confirming that they do have resistance to Bt corn for rootworm. Last year, there is some other fields in the state of Illinois that have not yet been confirmed to have resistance in them from last year. Will it become a bigger problem, do you think?
Well, I think it could potentially. Last year, a researcher at Iowa State University published the first report confirming the evolution of field resistance to this Cry3BB1 protein. This was the protein that hit the marketplace for the first time back in 2003. Following that report, there were some fields in northwestern and north central Illinois that also had severe root injury. These had been fields devoted to continuous corn for many years. There was really no indication that traits had been rotated for many years. Adults were collected in some of those fields and sent to Iowa State. The offspring will be bioassayed using tests that we can use to either confirm or deny that resistance was the reason for why those fields had problems last year. So we hope to get the results back from Iowa State sometime in early August, and I can share those with producers at our large agronomy day on campus in August out here on the South Farm.
One final question then for you. Producers will be worried, especially those that are in the northwestern and the western part of the state of Illinois now, more likely those to the west of the areas that have been found to have Bt corn with problems for western corn rootworm. What should they do in the way of scouting their fields?
Well, number one, I think be on guard for a very early flush of western corn rootworm adults this year. Plants that are under moisture stress are more likely to have yield loss either due to severe root pruning or clipping of silk. So definitely keep an eye out for these insects much earlier than ever before. If they see any signs of lodging, if they see any indication that their Bt product is not performed adequately, they need to let the seed company representative know this. I would also be happy to learn of these reports so that I can pass them along to clientele and stakeholders throughout the state in the bulletin that we put together every week. But the registrants need to be made aware of any type of performance challenges that may be out there with regard to Bt hybrids.
Mike Gray is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois. You can learn more from him about Bt-resistant western corn rootworm on the bulletin website at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu or by attending Agronomy Day in the month of August right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus.
WILL programs are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's As You Like It, Othello, Comedy of Errors, and The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan from June 28th through August 11th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
Support comes from the Sea Boat in Champaign with a Southern-style menu featuring the Sea Boat sandwich, two pieces of fish on a wheat bun with lettuce, tomato, and tartar sauce. Also, collard greens, fried okra, cornbread, baked macaroni and cheese, and spaghetti. The Sea Boat on West Kirby across from County Market. Delivery and catering at 351-6200.
Well, I suspect that many of you saw the frosted corn photos that I sent out earlier in the year. There was a field right next to the one that looked really bad. It was planted the 14th day of March, the one that survived, that is, and was not replanted. It's tasseling now, but really short. That's not to be unexpected, says Extension agronomist Amerson Nafsiker.
And that's what we can expect. The cool weathers that we've had the last couple weeks, you know, our growing degree day accumulations have slowed down to more normal ranges what they would be this year, but we don't give back what we got in May, so the crop is certainly, I think it's the biggest it's ever been now, but the shortening that we're going to see mostly coming around because of the dryness, but also early planted corn tends to be short. We might have expected this year to be not quite that much shorter because of the warm May that we had, but we normally expect early planted corn to be short, but we think it's usually because it just experiences lower temperatures during the expansion of its internodes, and this year, you know, that's not really happening. I think this year it's more water-related.
So growing degree days, I think, are 117% as of May 1 or something along those lines.
That's probably right. But all of that came in May. In June, we haven't actually been above normal. And I looked at the Pioneer's calculator, which is a pretty nifty thing to look at. And I think in June so far, it's been about average. It remains only about 100 above normal since May 1, and that may be that percentage, but that's, you know, that's not a huge amount when we're accumulating these days 100 in about 5 days. But, you know, it does make a big difference when the night temperature is 60 and the high is 80. That's 20 growing degree days. When the night temperature is 70 and the high is 90, we have the 86-degree cutoff, so that would be, 28, almost, you know, it's 40% more. and so that does make a difference. Cool stretches like this feel good, but as I made the point there, it also means lower growth rates in general on a daily basis for the crop.
Your expectation is that the corn crop across the state should be shorter than average. Is that... And then is that something to worry about or not to worry about?
Well, people often associate tall corn with high yield potential. And certainly a lot of the really good corn we've seen in the past is not short. Theoretically, we could make a full yield with a 6-foot tall crop. Realistically, crops that are that short typically have a little less leaf area, perhaps, and it may be oriented a little bit differently. It's difficult for such crops to intercept full sunlight as well as a taller crop can do. So, all things being equal, shortening the crop by a foot or 2 feet below its normal height of, say, 8 feet, doesn't have to have a large effect on yield. Realistically, the conditions that brought it to that may lower the yield potential a little bit. I'm not particularly concerned about a crop that's starting to show tassels and is only 6 feet tall. It will grow some more, but with the limitations on soil water that we've had, and of course, by the time a crop gets to pollination time, it's used up 40% of, you know, 10 inches of water, probably. And so where we haven't gotten very much rainfall, certainly shortages have started to reduce the ability of the crop to take up enough water to expand its cells. And that means that neither the internodes or the height of the plant nor the leaf area is quite full-sized or as large as it could have been if we had had better water.
Can you contrast the difference between the way the crop looks, because it still looks good for both corn and soybeans, I think, now, but that the inches of rainfall, the amount of rainfall we've had, the precipitation has been really pretty short.
I don't think that the lack of rainfall, and I know everybody has their own way of looking or thinking about that. Some people are going back to last August and accumulating all the deficits we've had since then. Those aren't terribly meaningful. If the soil is not fully recharged, that is, more or less at field capacity, water held against gravity, by the time the crop is planted, then there is a concern. It simply means that you need more water in season than to have a full supply. Obviously, this year we haven't gotten normal amounts of water in season, really, anywhere in the state. I think every place in Illinois is below normal rainfall since the 1st of April and since the 1st of May. There was some rainfall on Monday of this week in some in extreme southern Illinois, which has been one of the driest areas. But we're certainly running a deficit at this point. Deficit is a scary word, and it makes people think, well, we've really lost yield potential. I don't think we've lost a great deal of yield potential yet in the corn crop. Some of the positives are the really good color that most of the crop has. If we watch it during this rapid growth phase, when the crop goes from waist high to head high, you know, in a couple of weeks or less, when the crop goes from waist high to head high, maybe in a week, you know, this is what makes us feel good about the growth rate. I don't think that rate is quite as high this year as it would normally be, simply because it's been hard for the crop to extract enough water to get that to happen. But the fact that the crop still has its leaves out and active through most of the day, if not all of the day, means that it's still doing photosynthesis. And it's photosynthesis that makes this whole system work, and nothing else.
So does that mean it doesn't matter as much to you that it's not putting on the height, because pollination and then grain fill is less impacted or not impacted, and you'll have to tell me, by the height of the corn?
Well, the important thing regarding height is still how good a leaf canopy the crop can make. Now, if it's been under some stress up to this point that has those internodes, say, 5 inches long instead of 6 inches long, which overall can make a difference of 8-12 inches on a crop, that's probably not real serious, as long as the leaves are normal size and are out and they're green. Really, yield potential comes from two things in the corn crop. One is having enough kernels form during pollination, and the other is having the conditions during grain fill that can fill those kernels then fully. And those two things are, in some ways, the only things that matter. What happens before pollination is important only to the extent that it has an effect on those two things. We need to have readily available water at the time of pollination, or kernel numbers don't come up to what we'd like them to be. There's a lot of concern that stress during early vegetative, mid-vegetative stages, say before the crop is waist high or chest high, you know, really does a number on yield potential. The reality is we've all seen a crop that you can look out across it at the time of pollination and you say, this thing can't yield more than 120 bushel, and you can then get rainfall and it ends up yielding 200 plus. So the anecdotal evidence would be that a short growing crop, one that never attains its 8 or 9 feet height that we like to look at and walk through and be proud of, generally has very good yield potential if the kernel numbers are there and the canopy is there after pollination to get them filled.
turn your attention to the soybeans. The BASF Research Farm, prior to the 21st day of June, by almost 10 days, has soybeans that are flowering on it, so ahead of the longest day of the year. How unusual might that be? And what are your concerns or not concerns about the bean crop in the state?
The biggest concern with the bean crop right now is just the stand in some fields. It's not fully up because of dry places in the field where there was not enough moisture, and we didn't get enough moisture after planting to even get a stand. That's a real concern, and as we get later in June, you know, I would certainly be willing to go out and replant those, but soil moisture just to get the crop established is certainly an issue in some places. Where the crop was planted in May and has gotten off to a pretty good start with a good stand, it's been able to tap into soil moisture, and some of that crop now is coming along pretty nicely. Our earliest planted soybeans here, which were planted about the 20th of April or so, are now growing like gangbusters. They're 15, 16 inches tall, probably six-leaf stage, and the soybean has a reasonably good extractive root system, so it can take water up. Not quite as aggressively as corn can, but it certainly is capable of doing that. And a lot of the crop, at least in this area, doesn't show a continuing lack of water that would just have it basically staying small at this point. Soybeans often look pretty sickly when they don't have enough water, and their leaves kind of droop during the day. Unlike corns, which roll up, but in both cases, the crop is not doing much. It's just sitting there surviving for that day. And over time, that lack of daily productivity starts to take its toll, and growth rates, of course, are almost zero in those fields. Soybean has good ability to stay alive during those periods, and once it does get water, it can come back and grow pretty rapidly. It takes temperatures to make that happen, of course. Seeing flowers before the longest day of the year is not terribly unusual on soybeans. Usually during the time around the longest day, they may sort of stop flowering for a while and then resume flowering again. And the number of pods that usually result from this very early flowering is generally kind of insignificant. It might make us take note, and we saw ours out here have flowers on them now too. But the cooler nights that we're having right now actually will put a halt to that process. And I expect flowering to stop. I expect flowers to stop appearing now until nights warm up again. It was the warm nights in May and early June that brought us these flowers that are on the crop now. We generally tend to think day length is the thing that really determines when soybeans flower. Night temperatures are just as important. It's a fun process to ponder, but soybeans have a hormone that converts from one form to the other during the night hours. When light hits them, they flip back to the other one that means that flowers don't form. But if the nights are long enough, and if the nights are warm enough, then flowering gets triggered. Plants have to be up at about a V3 stage or so before any flowers can form. But our crop has been there for the last week or so, maybe more than that, with early planted soybeans. So flower formation under these conditions is not unusual at all. The question is whether it really means very much. Flowers and the large numbers of pods that we need to make good yields is going to be determined in July, as always. And it's not that flowering early will hurt anything, but probably doesn't really help that much either.
Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist at the University of Illinois. You can always learn more from him on the Bulletin website at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. You've been listening to a special edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. We learn the story behind the story to get at the deeper truths that connect us all. I'm Audie Cornish. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
Thanks to your support this year, the news and information you value is here every day.
With Illinois Public Media News, I'm Jeff Bossert.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
For Illinois Public Media News, I'm Sean Powers.
Support your source for balanced news and information, and follow our progress on WILL.illinois.edu.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.